deliver you period number two on this January 3rd, 2011. 011, I guess, is what we're calling it. Tim Kulmainen joins us from Breakdown USA as he's taking a look at. We basically essentially agreed on our top 10 out of the class 2A, which is some great stuff. And I guess it goes to show that we're thinking in the right direction. When you take a look at the class 1A, what do you have there? I think the team that was the most surprising or looked the most out of place in the tournaments this weekend were the Breck Mustangs.
Yeah, that was a tough team to rank early in the year because they were shutting out all the opponents that they played. They lost just a ton of guys from that two-time state championship team, so it was kind of tough to get a read on them. Were these new kids going to step in without a hitch, or was there going to be a little hiccup? And there was a little hiccup over the weekend in that Schwann Cup gold. They lost all three games.
Do you come out with St. Thomas number one?
You know, I don't. This is where we could be really interesting. If we agreed in double A, we are probably going to disagree more often than not in single A. And this was very tough to rank because you had these two teams, Breck, St. Thomas Academy, and then even Blake in the Silver Division, playing against some really tough Class 2A teams and, you know, not necessarily doing so well against those teams. And so it was tough to try to gauge that versus some of the other Class A teams that were playing other Class A teams.
I.e. Rochester Lords, and at number four this past week, you know, are they going to go to number one? Because I believe they won the Kiwanis tournament in Rochester.
They lost one game down there.
Oh,
they,
sorry.
They got shut out by Wisconsin's top team, so they finally lost their first game. And although I will say I did go with an undefeated team at number one, and I'm not necessarily confident that it's going to stay this way, but I went with Vermantown number one. You know, the Hawks, they lost 14 guys from last year's roster when they finished second in the state. So, again, they're one of those teams that's very young, very new. The few veteran players that they did have coming back have really been leading those guys.
Well, Tim, you'll get no argument out of me on the Hawks because I think they've completely retooled and have done the job and are definitely worthy of that number one slot. So who'd you come in with at number two?
Number two, I went with St. Thomas Academy. Yep. They, other than one game at that gold division, they had a good showing there. They ended up winning one game and then losing to Duluth. They beat White Bear Lake, I know. And the Schwann Cup gold. And had a decent showing there. And so I think that they did enough to hang on to that number two spot. And I even really considered them strongly for number one just based on what they did, too.
I think you did the right thing with the undefeated team, though, at that juncture in the game. Where do you fit in Virginia Mountain Iron, Buell, Blake, and the likes of that, and Rochester Lords?
Yeah, let me run down here. Number three, I put Blake. They finished third in that silver division. And, you know, other than having a bad game against Holy Angels, I thought they did okay in that silver division. So we put them in at number three. Number four, I put Breck. I still think they're very talented. They just ran into some double-A teams that they didn't match up against, and that showed in the result. Number five, I went with Little Falls. They had a great win over St. Cloud Tech, a team that many have been thinking is going to make some noise.
Look at you propelling the Flyers to the upper echelon.
Yeah, I'm sure those fans will be happy. I know they're very vocal. Little Falls fans like to push their team, so I'm sure they'll enjoy seeing Little Falls up that high in my ranking. Six, I went with Rochester Lord after losing that game. It's tough to push them down too far, but they're 11-1 now. I slotted them in at number six. Number seven, I put Hibbing. I like what they've done, even though they lost head-to-head to Virginia earlier this year. I kind of like the direction that they've been going in, as opposed to Virginia, which has lost a couple of games recently. Eight, I went with undefeated Totino Grace. We don't know exactly how good they are yet, but they are still unbeaten, and I wanted to slip them in there. Number nine is where I put Virginia. It's a tough ranking for them. I think they're better than that, but for now I'm going to put them there. And number 10, I put Duluth Marshall.
Okay, so when you get through the rankings of this week and the Hub compiles them, how does Lauren go about that? Because obviously when we do the MyFoxHockey.com rankings, it's a table of brain wizards that consists of one, and it's me. And we do all class, one class, old school, top 10, you know, and it doesn't matter where you play and what conference you're in. How does this shake down, and how many people are sending in their top 10s to Lauren?
I know that he has a handful of coaches that he's asking for input on these. And then there's a few of us in that contribute to the hub that he likes to ask as well that send in each week. I don't know how consistent that top group of coaches sending in their results is or sending in their rankings is, but I do know that he goes through and takes the average, you know, and of
sure.
several sources and tries to work through a top 10 that way.
A weighted scale.
The top 10 I send in isn't necessarily the one that is posted on the site. I've had disagreements with him before too about where teams are ranked.
I was gonna say, so how much different does the committee's top 10 look from what you bring, especially in the Class A?
Class A is significantly different. It's so much tougher to rank those Class A teams because they don't necessarily always play each other. You know, you'll almost never see a Rochester Lurch playing a Virginia, but you're going to get to see that here coming up. So, but yeah, usually there's not as much crossover, and so it's a lot tougher to.
It gets a little bit dicier, so to speak, right? I mean, it's a tougher deal. So, let's shift gears a little bit. First of all, you saw me on day one of the Holiday Classic, which saw the big Benilde Eden Prairie game, and then we had the Moorheads of the world, Centennial, Jefferson, Elk River, Maple Grove. We saw all that action, and it played out, you know, I don't know the way we expected, but no major upsets there. Day two occurs, then we have the Moorhead victory over Wayzata, which was a big shocker in the high school hockey world. And you were off at the Schwann Cup. But first, to give you the shocker perspective, you know, I got a genuine feeling from that Moorhead Spud team that they weren't overly shocked themselves and that they expected to win that hockey game and that they were in it from the start. They skated stride for stride with the Wayzata Trojans and were able to do the things they wanted to do and really inflict the ill will against the top line. They really limited the scoring chances and the space and the time for Cameron Easy and Lucia. It was very effective, and they did it in all three zones. Another note, and I mentioned this in my Dump and Chase article on myfoxhockey.com in that column, that I felt as though the absence of Cage Tiller, who was out with an injury on his foot, was noticeable. And it was no knock to anybody that was filling in on his slot on the second line. They just lost that chemistry that they have on that line, and you could feel it. You know, that's the line with Mika, Tiller, and Brian Tabry. And I think that kind of knocked this team off whack because they definitely needed to go to the depth to beat the Moorhead Spuds, who clearly took that away.
You know, it's funny, just after that game ended, I think you sent me a text with the score, and first I thought you were joking. Moorhead has done to this point, but I didn't think they had given any indication that they were capable of something like that heading into the holiday tournament. In fact, I can't imagine how confident they were. The last game they had before heading into the holidays, they hosted Duluth East up here, and Duluth East just absolutely took care of them. I mean, controlled the puck 80% of the game and had Moorhead chasing them around the defensive zone, all game long. And I don't know, it would have been fun to be a fly on the wall to hear what Moorhead coach Dave Morinville told those guys heading into the holidays.
But well, what was...
whatever it was, maybe he should bottle that up and sell it as a motivational tool or something.
It was interesting, and it's intriguing. That's why this game is so great, because I got to thinking about that very factor. I'm going, okay, how can Duluth East, you know, basically run Moorhead off the ice? You said it wasn't even close. You know, I mean, it was a 6-0 pounding, and the Duluth East Greyhounds were very good. And so then I think, okay, how does this happen? There's two factors I think that came into play. Number one was you really felt as though it was a holiday tournament for Moorhead. They were on the bus in the hotel room, very focused, and there weren't a lot of other things they had to do, like schoolwork or friends or whatever else they had to do. And it kind of became about them, and I think it became a good, quote, road trip experience as much as one can be for a high school team. And I think that contributed to them all buying in and doing the things they needed to do defensively. The other thing is, and I wanted to ask you this, at that Duluth East game, how much did Duluth East move the puck? Were they passing a lot?
They were. They had, I would say, total control of that puck 80% of the game. I mean, they had crisp tape passes, length of the rink ones. They like to send the forwards high, and they were hitting them on the tape. And once they got into the offensive zone, they got that control of that puck behind the net and cycled through the offensive zone, and Moorhead just chased them all game long, could not catch them.
I just felt as though the Wayzata Trojans were more content on carrying the puck and they weren't moving it as well as they should have, could have, and have done. And when the real estate got tighter on them, you saw their bigger players trying to hold the puck a little bit longer and try to create to make more space. But, you know, the Moorhead Spuds, they're a good high school hockey team, and they're not going to be fooled by the Dangles. You know, they've seen that since Pee-wees, for that matter. And I felt that was like a major difference in that hockey game, and that's how they were able to really snuff out and shut down any opportunities that the Wayzata Trojans were to be able to get. But hey, let's not fool anybody here. Michael Bitzer was as good as it gets. I've been a big Alex Lyon guy up at Lake of the Woods Baudette, but I think this guy is, if he's 1A, then Mike Bitzer's 1B as far as goaltending in the state's concerned. Charlie Lindgren, 1C.
Yeah, those three guys right now have really stood out. Bitzer, especially with his performance down there in St. Louis Park, if you were to talk to Moorhead about what their strength was coming into this year, Mooreville would have said defense and goaltending, no doubt about it. Bitzer kind of split time last year with Logan Marks, but it was pretty clear. I think he had a 93% save percentage and a real low goals against. It was pretty clear he was, as a sophomore, he was an up-and-coming kid.
He played as a freshman too, right?
Yeah, Mooreville, he's the only freshman goaltender, I believe, to ever play at varsity at Moorhead.
This is no disrespect to Logan Marks, but if you recall that six-game skid they went on in the middle of January, the year they went to the state finals, you know, it was Michael Bitzer that took over in goal for a while there. I think he was just a youngster, maybe ninth or tenth grader. And I watched that guy several times and said, you know, this kid's got the real deal. He has the goods. There's no question that those three goaltenders I just mentioned are going to play at the next levels, whether it's USHL, the NA, or NCAA Division I college hockey. They have definitely given us a bright spot for goaltending here in the great state of hockey, which we haven't really, let's be honest, seen a ton of goaltenders from this state move on to the next levels.
Yes, all three very athletic kids, too. I know Bitzer is a great baseball player up here, too. He's probably more talented as a baseball player, even if you can believe that.
You better watch it. Yeah. My squad's had some major clashes with the Moorhead group up in Babe Ruth action in some tournaments. It was classic up there this past summer. So if he comes from a program that produces that, those were good players at a nice team, and no question. This kid's a good athlete, and you could see it with his glove. It's as good as it gets. Other things that I took from the holiday tournament, the Holiday Classic, was, you know, the Maple Grove Crimson have really stepped forward as a team that wants to be forceful and make a statement for themselves. Whether or not they're going to be able to defeat the Blaine Bengals for the first time to be a different team than them in 6 years to go to the state tournament out of the Section 5AA is yet to be seen. But their body of work right now is showing that they're not going to go away.
Yeah, I think the only thing that Maple Grove doesn't have for it now is that history of success. Yeah, I think that's the only thing they're missing. If you were to match those two teams up head-to-head, you would look at them and say, you know, I think Maple Grove has edges in certain, you know, in this part, in this part, in this part. The only thing that they're missing is that experience, and we'll see if it catches up to them in the playoffs. But they're looking tough. That looks to be a pretty good battle between those two programs right now.
You know, the only way to gain it is to take it. And, you know, at some point, every team needs to gain experience and build on that tradition. And right now is the time for the Maple Grove Crimson. They were very close last year, but you know what? They had to get through a couple of top-notch, top-flight players, and Nick Bukestad and Danny Harper were really steady in that hockey game in the section final. They're not there this year. Now, Johnny Bradzinski and company are going to step up. Dylan Lambert, Nick Malvin, they're going to say, hey, we've been there, we've been on the bench, we've been on the ice with those guys, and so we know what it takes, and you're not taking it from us. So I think that section with those two teams, I'm not discounting the Champlin Parks, who are pretty good of the world, but the fact is it's going to come down to them, and I saw a lot of the Maple Grove Crimson. Tim, you know, we're going to bring on the Holy Angels Stars here in period number two, but we've already bantered through this one, so let's go on to the third period and get to your Schwann Cup activity, and then bring on Guy Olson and Joseph Labate right here on the Overtime Radio Network. Back in a moment.